It's Tuesday the 5th of September and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host Paul Hinton and as ever I'm joined by Sean Phillips. But for the first time we're not joined by Aaron Wren who's sunning himself in Florida. Hello there Sean.
Hello there Paul.
And we're back after a bit of an extended break, mainly due to Sean deciding he liked the CHL road trip so much. He'd add another couple of days on if you followed the trials of the Devils fans getting back from Germany. Sean was one of them, so we couldn't squeeze in a podcast last week. You'll do anything to extend your holidays, won't you?
Yeah, anything, yeah. Take a manual bus to all the way up the Alps and it's bound to break down. So, yeah, you know, it was actually planned.
Well, I've heard that some people actually had swimming costumes packed ready and you just happened to end up in a spa. So it seems a bit fishy to me. So we've got the road trip, the away games to Davos and Liberec to look back at, and then the home games, which nothing of note happened in either of those games. So we'll probably get over those quite quickly. We've got a couple of Rami suggestions in. We're going to talk about a little bit of news around the league before previewing the start of competitive fixtures against British teams, albeit Challenge Cup games coming up this weekend. So we've got quite a few bit to get through, so we'll get cracking with the Davos game, which was a couple of weeks ago now, and turned into a little bit of a drubbing for the Devils. But an amazing place to watch your team play hockey, Sean.
Oh, unbelievable. Little mountainous town in Davos in the Swiss Alps, but you couldn't ask for a better place to watch hockey in terms of, you know, the fan passion. It was unbelievable. Like the whole super block behind the one net was excellent. It was great to see that. My first time watching hockey in Europe and to see the sort of how they get behind their team was unbelievable. The inside, although a great arena, it is quite old and quite retro. It did bring back a lot of feels of the old BBT before they put the blocks in the before they put the blocks properly in the corners, because obviously we were shoved in the corner. And yeah, that was it was nice to sort of get a bit of a feel for that, but obviously on a much grander scale, it was a proper hockey barn and great little town, great fans, and yeah, they just loved their hockey, which was great. And unfortunately, the result didn't quite go our way, but I'm sure we'll come on to that in just a sec.
Yeah, definitely. I think you could tell the difference in quality almost instantly. I think the first face-off we won, we took pass the puck back to our blue line, and it just felt like there were Davos players all over us almost instantly. Like they were almost moving quicker than the puck, and it really set the tone for the night. And the Devils just struggled to keep up. Start of the first period, Sean, Devils ran into a bit of penalty trouble. Mark Lewis and Jake Morissette in a quick succession taking penalties, and Davos proved to be more than ruthless on the power play, scoring both. Morissette in particular just seemed to be a penalty where he put his stick out and the Davos' players' legs moved quicker than he could move his stick, and just resulted in an obvious tripping call. But 2-0 down and probably put the game to bed at that stage, but you know, the Devils managed to hold firm for the rest of that first period.
Yeah, it was incredible for us to just hold them to two after that first period, because as you said, right from the opening draw, the foot speed of them was just something else. It's like I said just now, I've not watched a game in Europe before, watched sort of like a high-level European team. You know, we saw Zagreb last year and Banska Bystrica, but Davos, after their full pre-season, I know they played a couple of KHL teams as part of their pre-season, and they were just rapid. They looked a cut above, and you can see why they're one of the, you know, biggest clubs in world hockey, and I was pleased to have kept it to two, and I thought that we could, you know, limit the damage throughout the game, and then they just kept coming at us. Davos were just, you know, if they were ruthless in the first period, then they were something else in the second. It was crazy. They just literally ramped it up and literally showed why they are one of the biggest teams on the planet, and they just showed why the Elite League is, or on the day they showed why the Elite League is far, far inferior to the Swiss League.
Yeah, things, you know, passes were taken with a single touch. You know, I can't remember them icing the puck. You know, hardly any offsides. And you know, it was still only 3-0 at the halfway stage. The goal early in the second had made it 3-0. And that's just when they turned it on, and they were just, the goals started to flow then. You're 31-26. And then that 30, between 33-19 and 35-11, three goals were scored. The final two with just 6 seconds in between. With the Devils just sleeping off the face-off and letting them straight in on Bounds. And it was at that seventh goal. A decision was made to pull Bams for the last 25 minutes and put Thomas Moody in net. They didn't get another goal. And we actually scored then 40 seconds into the third period. A goal that the Devils fans celebrated as if we'd just won the league. by that stage, we were done. We were just happy if we'd got a goal. And Joey Martin on the power play from Ben Tavolio and Hotham gave us that and set up, 20 minutes of pretty much non-stop singing from the Devils' end, Sean.
Yeah, well, I think that we had no expectation going into that game. I think the Devils fans would have been happy with two things. One would have been to keep it to single figures, and one would have been to score a goal. And we didn't quite keep it to single figures, but we did score a goal, and we let Davos know how excited we were about it as well. Like you said, it was as much as Davos is a big hockey club and a big hockey town, they were loud and they got behind their team, and then we showed why we were all there. And because Cardiff fans are, when we're on the road, we show how passionate we are. And that was one example of, like you said, the whole of the rest of the period and afterwards. I think we were probably the last sort of set of people in the building. And the Davos fans were sort of hanging behind, sort of waiting for us to get out and seeing how long we'd stay there. It was crazy. We gave a good showing of ourselves as a club on that day, I think.
Yeah, and you sort of mentioned the noise of the fans, but yeah, it must have been a good 150, 160 Devils fans in Davos, which really helped with the atmosphere. And Davos fans were coming over after the game, applauding the fans as everyone stayed behind singing and just enjoying ourselves.
And outside as well, outside the rink afterwards as well.
Davos
fans getting in. It was great that I think that we as the fans who had travelled out there to watch our team and get absolutely spanked and still enjoy it, the Davos fans sort of realised how passionate our fans were. I think maybe they don't realise what a big deal hockey is to some people in our country, and so it was good to sort of for them to see that this is like Cardiff is a hockey hotbed and as well as Davos. And yeah, I think that was really good for them to see and for us to see exactly. To meet like-minded people, and that was really an interesting experience.
Yeah, even though it had got to double figures, as we said, with the three more goals. But Tom Moody, more than holding his own and making some good saves in his 25 minutes in net. So you're just keeping that pressure on Ben Bounds for the starts throughout the season, which is really good to see. From Davos, the trek up to Czech Republic started for the majority of Davos fans that were there. And the game against Liberec, and we got excited when we scored against Davos. I think we got even more excited when we not only took the lead, but we doubled that lead to lead 2-0 at the end of the first period, Sean.
Yeah, well, you come off the sort of play that we put together, and we put together some good opening minutes. You could see that Liberec were a good side from the opening face-off, but maybe not quite at the level of Davos, and that we could probably hold our own against them. And we did more than that in the first period. You look at the goal from Joey Martin, short-handed, nonetheless. He's got an option to the left of him, which the netminder has to account for. But Martin just pulls an absolute bullet and throws it right upstairs on the netminder for a short-handed goal. And like you said, we then go and double it. Paris floats running from the slot. There's a lot of traffic in front of the netminder screened, and we go into the first period break two goals up. And I think that was something very special. I think just to take the lead, as you said, but then to sort of double it and realize that we could really be in with a chance of winning this game. That was a really, really great start from us and showed why, we are the Elite League champions, and we have come to, like I said, we've come to give a good show of ourselves. And I think in that opening period, we definitely did so.
Yes. Yeah. And finished the period with, still 3 minutes 10 of a power play to play at the start of the third. And Start of the second, sorry. And I think that was a crucial bit of play there, that Liberec knew that a goal to make it 3-0, they obviously did have a little bit more quality in it than it. But 3-0 would have been a really difficult scoreline for them to come back from, and they managed to kill it. And you just saw them from there start to assert their dominance a little bit more. Potentially, an underestimated Devils, coming off a 10-1 drubbing and going into their barn. They possibly thought that it was going to be a very similar story. And that second period, just saw them up it a little bit. And, three goals in sort of quite quick succession, just four minutes splitting them in the middle of the second. And gave them that 3-2 lead. And it was disappointing after, I think, getting almost halfway through the game, 2-0 up. That it was just that little bit in the back of your mind starting to think this could be something really special, not just we've led, it could be a win away in Europe. But after that third goal, I think myself at least, I expected Liberec to really pull away and show their dominance and maybe make the scoreline look quite unflattering. But instead, Sean, the Devils came out in the third and just came back into the game and we're really pushing towards the end, and obviously Liberec got a couple of goals in the last 2 minutes, 10 seconds. They got a shorthanded goal when we were pushing, and then an empty netter. But in that third period, the Devils more than held their own, gave a great account, and had some great chances to tie the game up.
Yeah, we did, and we did. We kept ploughing through it. We maybe, like you said, Liberec really played their hearts out in the second to get back into the game and take the lead. But in the third, we made no effort of we made no point of sitting back and holding on to that result of that one goal defeat. We were going for it. And until that short-handed goal, which you just mentioned, it was a bit of a fluff on the blue line, and they go up the other end and score a brutal breakaway goal. In fairness, it was a great breakaway from the Liberec forward. And Ben Bounds, who had been stellar all through the second period, literally kept us in the game. Some of the saves he pulled off were in that second were up there with world class. You look at the total shots on goal at the end of the game, and there were 47 shots on goal and four allowed when you count one of them being on an empty net. So Ben Bounds was absolutely outstanding in that second period and kept us in the game when Liberec were really ramping up the pressure. And then in that third period, as you said, we kept going and we pushed for it, and we looked like competing. You lose a game in the Elite League 5-2 to a team like Nottingham, your Sheffield, by the same sort of, token. You lose a 2-goal lead to those guys. They score one off the rush, and that's not a result to be ashamed of in the Elite League. So to do it against the champs of, the Czech champs is something which I personally, I was a bit disappointed given that we'd started so well and that, in my, deep down, I probably tried to hold my expectations down. But after they came back, but like when it got to 3-2, I fully expected us to lose that game. I didn't think we had it in us to go forward and win the game from there. But we gave it everything, and that's all that you can ask. Liberec were just faster, stronger. They looked well conditioned. Their experience showed through, and yeah, they were just excellent. And the Devils gave a good account of themselves, and that's all we can ask.
Yeah, another great night, and it was. And from my point of view, it was nice that there was a game where we'd held our own. So I think after Davos, that there was just that worry that by the end of these four games, we'd just be on the back of four drubbings, and confidence might take a bit of a dip in the Devils. Fan base might be a bit put out by it, but that game and the way we played was quite promising, and to be honest, did give me a tiny bit of hope for the home game against Liberec. And
Just a quick one while we're on it, though, before we move on to the home game. We talked about a Violent Arena in Davos. That arena in Liberec was a real pleasure to visit as well. You look at the chance that, the Davos fans have been able to experience that in Davos and that place in Liberec, and two world-class venues. And I thought the crowd in Liberec were really good as well. They were really excellent fans.
Yeah, another, they had a noisy little terrace section away to the left of the Devils fans, but the majority of the rink got involved all night. There was some really good noise going on around the rink. And in terms of facilities, it was for a medium-sized rink. I think it was probably about 7,000, 8,000. Just sort of laid out beautifully. You know, the facilities in there were great. Things like the club shop and, you know, the staff. It was just a really nice place to visit, and it was totally different from Davos in how modern it was. But, you know, again, just another massive quality ice rink to visit. So, as I say, running then into the home game, started to think that if we're going to get a result in the CHL, it's that game, you know, that we held our own in Liberec. You know, there was no reason why we couldn't do the same on our home ice. And the Devils definitely set themselves up differently at home. We went out in that first period playing a much more physical game than we had done in either of the away games. Really high intensity. You know, some of the hockey that won us the league last year, but has been Andrew Lord's hallmark, with, you know, a lot of pressure from the forwards on the D-men, forcing the opposition into mistakes, and, you know, worked massively well. You know, 3 minutes in, Matthew Myers-Gesser, a great tip on a Drew Parrish shot, and just a minute and a half later, Patrick Astlin doubles the lead. And I think it's safe to say, Sean, that if the Devils could have kept that intensity up for 60 minutes, that was a game that we would have won.
Oh, 100%. But you look at a game like when you play that with that level of intensity, it's very hard to keep it up for 60 minutes, even at our level. And when you play a side like Liberec, I think it was almost impossible to keep up that intensity. And, you know, they came right back into it. I think they scored three unanswered then. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes. Yeah, it was. So they, Liberec had made it 2-1 by the end of the first period with a power play goal. And then ended up just five minutes into the second, made it 2-2. And, you know, and another, it's something we talked about a little bit last year, but 20 seconds after their equalising goal, they got the go-ahead goal on a power play. So, you know, in the space of conceding a goal, and then in the next 20 seconds, we gave away a penalty and had conceded. So, and again, it just felt like, well, I should have known better, but I did think, again, that we looked not necessarily tired, but you could tell in those first 5-6 minutes of the second period that the way that we'd gone out and started the game wasn't the way that we could play a full, we could play a full 60 minutes.
Yeah, it, off the back of a poor, pretty poor penalty taken by Justin Farina as well, right on the face-off. I think he did get called for the slash.
It was as the face-off finished, yeah.
Yeah, on the slash he got called for, but, you know, if he did not got called for the slash, I have a feeling he might have got called for the punch, which he just took for absolutely no reason, and you're going to get called for. I was baffled why he didn't get an extra penalty on the back of that play. But it looked like, but the fact that Farina made that sort of, that play sort of showed that frustration and tiredness was already starting to creep in, just like you said, just 5 minutes into the second period after that high intensity first period.
Yeah, and again, I sort of worried that we might start to slip, but Lane Ulmer got a game tying goal just before the halfway point of the game.
Absolute bullet.
Whatever word, I was going to say laser, but there's many words you can use for it. But, you know, another great goal. But just couldn't hold Liberec out, and it took them just over a minute to get their lead back. And then they got the fifth goal, which probably, you know, pretty much put the game to bed with just under 4 minutes left of the second, so to make it 5-3. Up until that fifth goal, there was a bit of me hoping, probably more than thinking, that, you know, the Devils were conserving a bit of energy in that second period to try and, you know, have a strong finish. You know, we were always within a goal. But after that fifth one, and you could really see that the Devils started to hack at the puck when we were defending. I think, you know, a couple of legs were starting to go a little bit, and, you know, really took its toll. And then in the third period, an early goal killed the game off, minute and a half in, to make it 6-3, and before the seventh went in on the power play. And then just a bit of, like, the game definitely got gritty from there. I think you could feel it through the team. Andrew Lord on the ice, you know, mentioned Farina already in a second, but some big hits started being thrown on both sides, which was nice to see, I think, for the home fans. You've seen the Devils. We were getting beat quite heavily, but still putting it out there. But Josh Batch got thrown with 5 minutes left from a check from behind that I didn't catch on the night, and I've not seen a replay of it. Sean on TV, did you manage to catch that hit?
No, I didn't quite catch that either, I'm afraid.
Sean was, I think he's supposed to be working. Or did you finish by then?
I'd finished by then. I managed to creep home just before the game started, but I think I was making my Cocoa Pops.
7-3, Sean had had enough. It was time for supper. Josh Batch got a 5-plus game, but as he was leaving the ice, the Liberec coach, bench coach, started goading him, which attracted the anger of Andrew Lord, who marched across the bench and started slamming his stick into the plexiglass between them, which I think he did another 2 or 3 times at various stages throughout the last 5 minutes of the game. And you just saw it then in the way the game went. Justin Farina got called for roughing with 2 minutes left. And, you know, I know the penalty on Matthew Myers was with just 5 seconds left, but we were on a delayed penalty, I think, for a good probably 40, 50 seconds, which obviously gave Liberec a 6-on-4, which they managed to turn into a 7-on-4. They were set in the zone for quite a while on the delayed penalty, and for some reason one of their players just left the bench. It was quite farcical, not one of the four officials noticed, and Liberec did get a goal with 5 seconds remaining. And it was only as all the players were going off the ice and pretty much every fan in attendance was counting 7 that they realised, and I think they had to go to the video to confirm there were 7 men on the ice. And the goal got washed, and it was 7-3, not 8-3. It was, in terms of the result of the game, it was neither here nor there, but it gave the home fans something to shout about and get upset with, which they definitely did. Overall, in the game, and we're obviously going to come off onto the Davos game, which was a lot more positive, but I think it was interesting that Andrew Lord tried something different to get a better result, Sean, but set up wrong.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting as well that I think Andrew Lowe was so disappointed. That Andrew Lowe was so disappointed with the performance that he did actually call training on the Friday. Traditionally, the guys don't train the day after they play, but I believe the guys put on the ice on the Friday. So he was not a happy man, and you could see why. I think he sort of did set it up wrong, and I think the guys went out in the first period and gave it everything, and it just wasn't enough. We just got beaten by a better side. They were better on the day. You look at the shots on goal, and it's farcical. The Devils had 23 shots and scored 3 goals. Liberec had 54 shots on goal.
On goal and 84 attempted shots.
That's, 84 attempted shots and 54 goals, which is just unbelievable. The Devils went 0-for-6 on the power play. Liberec went 3-for-6. And they just proved that they were more clinical, they were better, they were stronger, they were faster, and they were just, again, like in the Davos game, they just showed in situations why they were a cut above, and the Devils tried to go out and set the tone for the game and be the, you know, be the big team, and it just didn't work out for them, we'll stop talking about it now and move on to the better
game. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's safe to say the way that we've set up, that as soon as legs start to go, that's where you get penalties. And Devils definitely ran into penalty trouble against a team that were more than capable of punishing us. Mm. So a few nights later, after Sean had said, Andrew Lord a bit unhappy with the team, but we definitely went out set up a bit differently, but definitely didn't seem to have worked, because just 3.5 minutes it took for Davos to take the lead, Sean, and right, you were thinking, oh no, here we go again. We're back in Davos. We're in for a drubbing, but on our home ice this time.
Yeah, well, it was an offensive zone win from Davos. They put the puck on the point. Point man shoots it in off the boards. The board, you know, the puck takes a dreadful bounce off the boards. It was like being in Belfast. Bounced as far out as you could. Ben Bounds just couldn't react quick enough to the bounce Yeah, Davos managed to put it in through Nando Eggenberger and to make it 1-0 after 3:23. And like you said, I was sat there thinking, this is just going to be a repeat. I wasn't all that keen on being at that game at the time. I think that I didn't want to not see a team like Davos on a home ice, but I was dreading the result. And that sort of started to seep a bit more into my mind when that goal went in.
yeah, luckily nothing followed. But it was, you know, nice. Devils set up a lot more, I think conservative is probably the word, that we were playing a four-man trap at times, just with one guy high and then just pushing as the puck was coming forward, which obviously was going to give us more energy and definitely clogged it up, didn't give it Davos a lot of space to make use of, you know, of their better speed and skill, which they had. And, you know, the Devils started to come back into the game and had a lot of offensive zone time, had a power play opportunity, which we were unable to convert. But 11 and a half minutes in, Sean, Mark Richardson with finds himself in a lot of space in front of net and buries an absolute bullet. But after what felt like at the time, we'd had a good sort of, we'd probably had the majority of the play for the 3 or 4 minutes leading up to it.
Yeah, there was a good little spell in the zone as well. I think Joey Haddad worked brilliantly in the corner with Andrew Hotham, and they sort of combined. Haddad found himself at the point, and it was actually a delayed penalty goal, as far as I'm aware. Haddad took a stick up in the face, and he went down and managed to sort of get his stick on the puck, put it in deep to Andrew Hotham, who plays an absolutely blinding backhand pass right to Mark Richardson in the slot. And Richie, you know, we talk about Mark Richardson and how reliable he is over the last couple of years, and we'll talk about him a little bit later in the show, but his offensive upside in the last, you know, 18 months, since the start of last year, has been incredible. He scored some massive goals for us, and that goal was an absolute bullet. He did not look like a stay-at-home defenseman on that play. He jumped in perfectly, and yeah, like just an absolute rocket from Richardson, and the place went crazy, absolutely crazy. And I think it was deserved. We were, you know, after that original goal, we didn't let our heads drop, and the guys didn't sort of think that it was going to be a repeat of what happened. They went out there and they earned it. You know, they controlled the zone. They made a lot of good plays. They won every battle on the out of the boards and all that sort of thing. And yeah, just some good work from Haddad, Hotham, and combining with Richardson, who, yeah, no one deserves it more than Mark Richardson in my eyes, and we're at a tie game.
We are, and a penalty to the Devils, and a minute later, a penalty to Davos puts the game at 4-on-4. And the Devils again with some really good offensive zone time. You're cycling the puck. Matthew Myers' penalty expires, and just goals in the last minute of games are always, you know, brilliant. But Joey Martin picks up yet another goal, his fourth goal of the CHL campaign, with just 19 seconds left in the first one. And if the first goal sent Ice Arena Wales wild, that definitely got the place rocking.
Yeah, well, it sent us wild at the top of the stairs behind block 4. It was great work again. Andrew Hotham grabs another assist on it. Sean Bentivoglio is all alone in front of the net. There's a Davos defenseman trying to slide and block him off. Bentivoglio could shoot at that point. He doesn't, takes his time, dangles around and finds Martin straight in front of the net, winning his race off the boards. And he just waits and waits and waits. The Davos netminder goes down and Martin fires it beautifully to give us the lead going into the first period break. And I think that's when, I think everyone was shell-shocked, I think. You know, I was talking to some people in the period break and they were just amazed. They couldn't believe what they were seeing. And I think that, spirits were definitely a lot higher than going into that first period break in Davos.
Yeah, and I think the difference was, it wasn't that we were winning 2-1 because we'd scored a couple of breakaway goals. We were winning 2-1 and arguably were the better team for the majority of the period. Not expected in the slightest. We ran into the second period and straight away into penalty trouble. Mark Lewis called for tripping. It was a bit of an interference call, I felt, because the guy didn't have the puck, but went over Mark Lewis's stick. 2 minutes, and Davos, you know, punished us. Just 2.5 minutes in, they tied the game up. And again, Devils almost straight away ran into penalty trouble with Josh Batch, but managed to kill that one off. But just 33 minutes into the game, Davos took the lead. And it was just that, for me, not the sinking feeling, but, you know, we'd led against Liberec twice. We'd led against Davos, and every time when they got back in the game, and once they asserted their lead, you know, the Devils, well, they just showed their class from there and went ahead. And I feared that it was going to be that way. And when we were heading to the end of the second, a goal down, would have been it. But yet again, another brilliantly timed goal. Another power play with Matthew Pope getting the goal, which was a tap in, because if the Andrew Hotham pass for Mark Richardson's goal was good, this one was unreal. It's worth two assists. Puts it on the edge of the crease on Pope's stick, and literally anyone could have had their stick there, and that was going to be a goal. A well-worked power play goal again, Sean.
Yeah, just want to go on to Davos's third goal. It was a real shame that they managed to score that one, actually, because I think it was the first sort of shift which Craig Moore had in the game. He went out there and threw a good hit in the forecheck, and we had a good chance on goal. But Davos then punished us, turned the puck over, rushed the other way, and I think it was off the back of a bit of a bad change. Batch just couldn't quite beat Simeon, and it was a shame that they had to take the lead like that against a line which promised, which did its job. It went out there and forechecked hard, and it's just a shame that Davos took advantage of the bad matchup on that. But then to see us come and tie it back up, as you said, a power play goal. I think you could have scored that goal, Paul, because the assist from Andrew Rotham was beyond.
If someone could have got me there, then yeah, I could have scored the goal. Well, but
I think you probably could have scored it from where you were if you had a long enough stick. Hotham just dangles around the Davos defenseman, makes him look like an absolute fool, and just threads an absolute needle to Matthew Pope, like, as you said, right on the edge of the slot. And yeah, just it was great. And the other thing is that those goals in the last minute of a period really, really ramp you up and really put your opponents down. And we did it twice in the last minute of the period. And I think that really sort of, that gets you into the locker room with adrenaline high and gets your spirits up. And it does make it more difficult for the other team. And I think that's probably where we found a bit more character than Davos. And yeah, I think that really, really helped.
Yeah, massively. And I think you could see that in the third. The Devils came out hard and just carried on. It's one of those things you worry they're going to tire. You're going to worry that Davos are going to click into another gear that you would imagine they had. We haven't seen them in Davos especially. But they didn't. The game just went, and it was, you know, a high, really high quality, evenly matched third period with the Devils getting chances, you know, penalties both ways. Ben Bounds taking a delay of game penalty with 7.5 minutes left, went to cover the puck, I think, almost instinctively when he's behind the net. And it's an obvious penalty, and the Devils managed to kill that. But I watched the third period with you, Sean, and when Davos took that penalty, bang on 5 minutes remaining, and we just said that not only were we drawing a game in the CHL with the last 5 minutes, that there was only, well, not only one team looking like, but there was one team that was going for the result more, and it was us. And we were saying just how great it was that we didn't necessarily expect anything, but just to be in that position was fantastic.
Oh yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, we looked like we wanted to win that hockey game. And we let's be honest, at this stage it would have been difficult for us to qualify, even if we'd won the game, because we still had two games against Swedish Giants Växjö to come. And so the team, you know, we were the team going for it, and yet Davos were the ones who really needed the points. And In regulation would have been great for them as well. And so the fact that we looked like the team who were going to go and take a win, if anyone, was really encouraging. And it was fantastic to see. And you mentioned Ben Bounds' delay of game penalty. He more than made up for it. With an absolute daylight robbery of a glove save. And I think it was in the last sort of 2 minutes.
I think it was about almost spot on 2 minutes to go. And it was one of those where the players on the ice, the sticks were going up in the air as the puck left, you know, and just the glove came from nowhere and the puck disappeared into it. Because I'm convinced I saw the puck hit the back of the net, because, you know, as the puck left the stick, it's over. Good night. We're valiant losers yet again, but Bams, you've pulled one out of the bag and more than kept us in the game. And it was, well, about 30 seconds later, Davos take another penalty. I've got to say, it was a really soft call. Sort of a guy turning with his stick, and the stick just caught, I can't remember now, the Devils player, but Cardiff Devils. So my pronunciation of Devils and Davos is far too similar. But I thought a soft call, Sean, but it gave us a minute and 15 of, well, 5-on-4 to finish the game, and knowing that we'd start overtime with 4-on-3 if we got there.
We nearly didn't get there.
I was going to say we so nearly didn't, and we could nearly say that we scored in the last minute of every period as well, not just the first two. With probably one of the more controversial disallowed goals that I can remember, that it seems, and having watched it back on TV, the commentators didn't seem to realise for quite a long time. We didn't realise we were jumping around, but it was waved off almost instantly. For a man in the crease after Joey Martin would have had what was his fifth goal in the CHL. What was your opinion on the call?
The guy, I just want to say, first of all, that it was an absolute rocket from Joey Martin. They found a slot beautifully for it in the net. And it was a real shame that it didn't go down as a marker. Myself, I thought it was a good goal. There is the slight rear of Matt Pope's skate blade in the crease, but there is some jostling with a Davos defenseman as well, so you have to take that into consideration. I don't think that it was worth a penalty on Davos for interference on Matt Pope, but then I also think that the jostling between the two of them makes up for the fact that the back of his skates, and it was literally the back of his blades, were in the crease, and I don't think that he impeded the netminder or, you know, took away his ability to make a save at all. So in my eyes, it was a good goal, but it was the foreign official, I believe, who wiped out the goal from directly in front of the net. He had a perfect view of it.
He had been calling Matt Pope for a while. You could see him shouting and sort of, you know, gesturing that he had to get out of the crease. So,
but that's
against you.
Yeah, oh, definitely. But the one thing which stuck with me is that although he was close enough to see it, I thought it was marginal enough to take a look at the video, and I think it was waved off, and I don't think the video was looked at. Correct me if I'm wrong, but from that, the time
I didn't believe, obviously, as we said, we weren't paying a lot of attention. We were jumping around thinking we'd just beaten Davos, but I didn't think that the replay was watched. There didn't seem to be time for it. My gut feeling is because the call on the ice was that the goal was washed, I don't think there was enough clear evidence to overturn the decision. So I think it would have stuck. Likewise, I think if a goal was given on the ice, it probably would have stood. It was that marginal that I don't think the video replay was conclusive. So, you know, obviously the decision always goes with the on-ice call then. So
yeah,
I don't think it would have made a difference, but I am surprised that they didn't make use of it, because, you know, it was such a crucial decision. It was, you know, the game-winning game with 45 seconds left. It was the game-winning decision. That was going to be it.
In a game where the points are shared, if you go to overtime as well, it's not like you're Elite League action where if you do win, you still get your 2 points. I know it goes against you as an overtime win, you still get your points. Whereas in the CHL, you're fighting for 3 points. And if you win overtime, the point is then shared, so you do drop a point as such.
Yeah, which I actually like the system. I think it works. It doesn't add extra
points. Oh yeah, definitely. Things. Yeah.
But yeah, and as we said, the Devils, we were not getting out of that group following the two defeats to Liberec. So neither in the end, in terms of points, it didn't matter, and in terms of the result, luckily it didn't matter, because just 23 seconds in, as we said, started overtime 4-on-3 with 45 seconds of power play. And so we commented, Sean, that we really, I felt we had to score on that when we had the man advantage, because 3-on-3, I think Davos's extra speed probably would have shown. But we'll never know, because Drew Paris, yet again, with a bullet.
I think it's actually been described as a cannon, officially. I think it was officially described as a cannon based on Josh Batch's Twitter poll. So yeah, we have to use the appropriate description of it, I'm afraid.
Apologies to Drew Paris. It was an absolute cannon of a shot. And we won, but I'm quite confident in saying that I celebrated us beating Davos twice. So if anything, it was better, Sean.
Well, yeah. Well, you watched the highlights from the CHL directly, and the sort of the commentator over the top of it sort of says sometimes it feels a little bit better in OT. And he couldn't have been more right, because we went absolutely crazy at what we thought was the game-winning goal. only to feel the total opposite. You know, it was total euphoria and then total heartbreak when they overturned the goal. And then to go back up and stay up after that was incredible. And an absolute cannon from Drew Parris. And it's interesting that Parris doesn't seem to have this big, massive wind-up. He sort of only winds up halfway. And just you hear the crack of the stick on the ice on the highlights, and the reaction from the crowd was absolutely insane. And overall, I think it's the most famous win in Cardiff Devils history. I really do. And in terms of pure quality, I think it's right up there with the best games I've ever seen as well, without a shadow of a doubt.
Oh, 100%. It was fantastic quality from both teams. And just a great end-to-end period. And as we said, we won, and just like the first period when we were leading, it's Devils weren't lucky. We didn't fluke that. We outshot Davos 30 shots to 20 on goal, 63 attempts to 43 shots, 43 attempts. Our face-off percentage was unreal. I think we won nearly 70% of face-offs, and our face-offs throughout the CHL have been really good as an all-round point, but just a great night to win, but to be the better team on the night as well is something special, Sean.
Yeah, I'm just going to ask you this because I think it is important when you look into it and put the result into perspective. Do you think Davos were poor, or do you think we were just very good, or was it a bit of both?
I think there's an element of both. I think we saw Davos in their home game, and that's not, they didn't have that jump. So interestingly, I didn't even think of it in the away game, in Davos, that the altitude was mentioned as potentially being a factor for the Devils, because playing at altitude, there's less air, the air's a bit thinner, so you can struggle, which people, it didn't contribute massively to the Devils' defeat. Davos were better than us, but talking to someone who knew a little bit about it also said that if you go from high altitude to low altitude, if you only go for a day or two, it doesn't affect you. If anything, you get the extra oxygen helps you. But if you stay there for an extended time, as they did because Davos had gone to Liberec first, that it can actually affect you. That it can affect, in the same way going to altitude affects it, you can have a negative effect on your cardio. That's the word I was looking for. So whether that played into it and why they looked a little bit slower, or potentially that they beat us, but have lost two games on the bounce to Växjö. Whether that is their heads were down a little bit, and Devils capitalised on that and just played a way that they didn't expect. I don't want to take a single thing away from the Devils though, because that wasn't a bad performance from Davos. That was a performance that will win most games in the Elite League, and would probably beat the Devils most of the time. I just think everything came together. Everyone had a good game. The tactics were spot on, everything.
I think if you look at it on a grading scale, eight to F or whatever, however you want to look at it, I think that was a B plus game from Davos. You know, they were by no stretch bad. I don't think they were at their best. I think if they were at their best and we were at their best, they would have taken a result. But we were just so good. And like you said, I don't want to take anything away from the Devils because they were just utterly fantastic. And I was talking to a Davos fan after the game, and I was talking about the Nottingham result, and the first thing he said was, "Yeah, but we're a better side than Burn." I said, "Nottingham beat Burn, we beat you guys." And they said, "Yeah, but in terms of quality, like, Davos are an unbelievable side." And it just felt so good. It just felt so good to win. It's our first time competing in the CHL. We get a group which is brutal. You get a group of Liberec, Växjö, and Davos, and you're not going to expect to come away with any results against those. We discussed if we were going to win one of those games, it was going to be against Liberec at home, and it wasn't. We beat Davos, the Swiss champions of however many times. Davos. I think someone put in perspective that our budget is probably about £500,000 a year. And their budget is about 11.5 million a year. That is crazy. That when you put it into that perspective, and you look at how much the players put into that one game to get that victory, that is just absolutely unbelievable character and shows why British hockey is moving forward. I know that the national team is on the slight up, but the Elite League is starting to develop and progress, and the rest of Europe's got to sit up and take notice, because you look at the way that we beat Davos, Nottingham are, you know, very likely going to progress out of their group, and, you know, if we had been in that group, we may have progressed. Who knows? But I'm just glad that we didn't disgrace ourselves, and we made our city proud and made Wales proud, and couldn't say anything else. That the guys just gave us everything, and just so proud, so proud.
Yeah, and we said it. I think in Davos, I heard a number of people saying that, you know, that was our reward for winning the league last year, to watch hockey of that quality in an arena of that quality with the history, you know, Spengler Cup, everything that goes with it. But Sunday was the reward for winning the league, beating them on your home ice in front of a really good crowd, which I was glad to see after, you know, a slightly emptier rink on the Thursday night for Liberec. Just anyone who spent any time watching the Devils last season and went going through the emotional ringer of the last 2 months, every game meaning so much, that's what it was for, isn't it? And it was just unreal. Absolutely brilliant night to watch the Devils. And we beat Davos.
We beat Davos. Unbelievable.
Just to mention it again.
As I said, there's only one man who could describe the result, and it's Chris Kamara. Unbelievable, Jeff.
Unbelievable. What is believable is, what's unbelievable is that from those four games and from that one amazing performance, we need to pick a player of the fortnight, Sean, and we better be on a similar page, because we haven't got a casting vote tonight.
What a shame. Bring back Aaron.
Bring back Aaron. If you're all missing Aaron, please don't tell us.
He doesn't
need the confidence boost. But I'll ask you, Sean, who, you know, across the four games, who's the guy that gets your vote?
Joey Martin. Plain and simple. Goals in three of the four games. Should have got a game-winning goal against Davos, but didn't. Short-handed in Liberec. The only goal in Davos itself, I just think that there are a couple of contenders, but outright, you look at the player who's been the most or stood out the most and looked a cut above the rest, and it's Joey Martin, hands down.
Yeah, it's difficult to disagree. I think, as you said, there's a few others who've, well, everyone had a great night Sunday, but there's a few others who've put their hand up consistently across the CHL campaign so far. But Joey Martin, four goals, you know, arguably could have had a fifth. And it's shown just why he's become Mr. Cardiff Devils over the, well, three and a little bit seasons now he's been with us. Such a crucial part of the team and sort of doing it on the highest level that the Devils have played for, well, forever. You know, the European competition was not at that level back in the day, as far as I know. Yeah, so Joey Martin is the player of the fortnight. We are going to get back to a player of the week. So we will get back to weekly podcasts very soon.
We will. Just one thing I wanted to query as well with you, Paul. Obviously, with the CHR being of the calibre it is this the sort of stage where you think that a guy like Joey Martin wearing the top scorer shirt, is this the stage where the rest of Europe sort of sits up and takes notice, and this is, you know, maybe where, you know, I don't like to say it, but is this where Europe comes to look for its next sort of level of players, and is Joey Martin the sort of player who can go and compete at that level?
I think he's definitely going to put himself in the shop window, along with Drew Paris, Andrew Hotham, you know, who both had some really good performances as well. Paris obviously has played, well, Paris and Hotham have both played Europe previously. Yeah, I think it's a possibility. I think the fact that the Devils are not, that we're not going to progress from the group is probably going to make it a little bit less likely. I think if there was another game, you know, where there's less games on, the chance of standing out and being noticed possibly a little bit higher. But if it's still something that he's considering for his career, which, you know, you couldn't fault anyone for wanting to bet themselves, he's done himself absolutely no harm in terms of next season and getting himself a really good contract. But I'd like to think that people weren't paying much attention. Maybe they were distracted by something else that was happening. I don't know what else happened on the night, because we beat Davos and that was enough for me. But yeah, the phrase put himself in the shop window is the one that I don't want to say, because I don't
really want to think about it, do you?
No, I hadn't thought about it either. So thank you for that little just that tiny little
dampener on the game.
on that the shining beacon that was in the game. I'm just going to stop thinking about it.
That's me.
just a little bit of grime on anything good. That's sure. Well, let's do a Ramite. I think there was plenty to love, and I think we'd had a couple of responses, Sean. So I'll throw it over to you.
We did indeed. We did have a couple of Ramites. Did you have a particular thing, Paul, of the CHR so far? What did you love most about it?
Taking out the obvious, the fact that we beat Davos, which is too obvious. It's the goal in Davos that we celebrated like a league winner, and you know, a full period of singing from the Devils fans, a full period, well, what felt like another period after the game had finished of singing as well, which it was just great to be in, like, on that stage in that type of arena and making that much noise with so many fans. That was it for me. I absolutely adored that. I adored the whole CHL trip and, you know, everything that came with it in terms of the hockey, but that third period and after the game was excellent and just really enjoyable. What's yours? What gets your vote?
My vote is going to be, I just can't disagree with you, really. I'd find it really hard to go with anything other than showcasing ourselves on a stage like that and doing our club and our country and our league proud, basically, to show that, like I said earlier, we're like-minded hockey fans, just like those in Switzerland, and it's their game out there. You know, everyone in Davos loves the hockey. You walk past a shop window, and there's a Davos flag in there, HC Davos, and that community is all about its hockey. And admittedly, Cardiff isn't all about its hockey, but there are a lot of fans who care an awful lot about it. And so, yeah, I think to show that and express that in a place that literally lives and breathes hockey was something special. That was my personal love.
Excellent. And what have we had on the...
Moving on. From Jason Manley, his loves, he said Drew Paris, the Sean Phillips dancing gif, and Drew Paris. I don't quite know what he's referring to, Paul. So,
If anyone hasn't seen it, there may be a little video of Sean dancing. That's been doing the rounds for some time. And yeah, sort of the fact that we beat Davos, I thought I'd use it as an excuse to share it with the world again. And... So do find it. It may even be retweeted by the Red Army Roundup account if you so wish to go and have a look for it. So
I would just like to clarify and say that it never happened, and the person on that podium is in fact Joffrey Baratheon from Game of Thrones. Jason Manley said he hated the cost of everything in Switzerland. It was a very, very expensive trip, so I can sympathize with him on that one. Michael Brain says, fantastic goal by Drew that will go down in Devil's folklore. And also a big shout to the Davos fans who came to Cardiff. You were awesome too. And I think we can all share that as well. Davos fans were exceptional. And the video of them singing a lullaby to Sean Bentivoglio's baby after the game is simply adorable and fantastic. And yeah, they were a credit to their club. Kenwyn Jones, Ramite, loved Davos, hated the result. I loved the Davos home result and hated being stuck in Bedfordshire. He caught the last 15 minutes on YouTube. I'm gutted for you, Cameron. After all the games that you've seen and gone through, that you missed that absolute joyous occasion. So I'm a bit sad that you missed that one. But he also said he loved the scenery and the people in Davos, hated being hungry, and he loved meeting me in the hotel foyer because I'm shorter than him. I'm shorter than everybody, so that doesn't really apply.
You can't claim that being taller than credit when it's Sean, unfortunately. It's that's the law.
But other than that, those were a good couple of Ramites we had. Like Paul said, we will be back to weekly podcasts very, very soon. And keep sending them in to us. What did you love? What did you hate about the week's action? Anything going on around the league? Anything even NHL-wise, world hockey, let us know. We'll talk about it. Read the best ones out. And I'll just go straight back over to yourself, Paul.
Yeah, so we touched on it briefly in when talking about our results, but just wanted to give a mention to Nottingham and what they've done in the CHL so far. A very similar schedule to us. They were in Switzerland, Czech Republic at the same time as us, and then home to the teams around the same time. So when we lost 10-1 in Davos, and I was thinking, oh, not bad. Well, not bad, but just, oh, that always happens. And it sort of came out they'd lost 5-2, and I thought, just a bit of me was like, oh, that's like twice as good as us, their defeat, but they still lost. And when we ran Liberec close, they won and won an away game. They won a game in Mountfield in the Czech Republic. Unbelievable result. And then did it again at home, beat them again. And then sort of the upset of upsets. I think Brno ranked fourth in the CHL this season, not even with a bottom ranked team. And they won on home ice, by 2 goals with an empty netter. And looking, as Sean said, like a real strong candidate to qualify from that group. They've got 2 games against Turku coming up, who've won one and lost one against both Mountfield and Brno. So, you know, in terms of results, everyone seems quite evenly matched in that group. So Nottingham massively flying the flag for the UK. And I think it's been interesting on looking on social media and the like, Sean. So a few Devils fans, after, obviously before we won our last game, almost writing the season off saying that Nottingham were, just going to be so much better because they'd won their games. I know that Liberec won their league and Mountfield, I think, finished fourth or fifth, someone had said, because they won the playoffs. So, you know, I know they're a lower team. You said that Davos fans mentioned that they were a better team than Brno as well. So, you know, potentially that's the case. But were you concerned, or do you think it's more down to, you know, Corey Nielsen has got quite a lot of experience coaching in Europe, and do you think that's just now coming to the forefront?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think I mentioned when I said earlier, if we had been in that group, would we have progressed? And, you know, we'll never know, obviously, but I think they have a marginally easier group than us. But yeah, I think that sort of experience which Corey Nielsen has in the CHL previously does definitely help. You look at our result in Davos and Andrew Lord. Andrew Lord has never coached against a team of that caliber, unless you look at the guys from Zagreb last year who probably gave Andrew Lord a lot of help and advice in what they do. But in competitive action, it's maybe, you know, it's his first real taste of that. And I think, you know, Corey Nielsen's been there. He's done it. He's won games in the CHL, and it does definitely help. He knows how to set up. He knows what it takes to win games against teams like that. So yeah, I do think it is genuinely a bit of both. And as you said, congrats to Nottingham. You know, they haven't quite progressed yet. They've still got a lot of work to do, but they are flying the flag very proudly for the Elite League, and the best of luck to them. I really do hope that they do progress, for the betterment of the UK, you know, UK hockey scene. I think as the further we progress into the Champions Hockey League, you know, we may get more slots in it next year, which means that we don't have to go and have a team win the Continental Cup to have two teams. It could be the league and playoff winners, that sort of thing. So yeah, I really, really wish them the best of luck. It would have been nice to have gone on another trip and progressed ourselves, but you know, it's just a bit more motivation to go and go one further again next year and win the league again, I suppose.
Definitely. And obviously one more trip still to come with Vaxjo. Everything you said for the positive for the league, for Nottingham to qualify through, but Nottingham having another trip to Europe when we're not, during what's going to be quite a busy season anyway, with both of us starting a little bit late, I wouldn't be too upset with that either in terms of our league prospects. In a purely selfish note. One more bit of news before we have a quick preview of the opening home weekend. And massively welcome news. Obviously, we've known it's been on the cards now for over a year, but a date has been confirmed for Mark Richardson's testimonial. And, you know, I think rarely does a podcast go by without one of us three mentioning just how great a servant he is to the Devils and has been. And hard to think of anyone that would warrant it more, Sean, or someone that it's great to see, because they just go into the radar so often, but you know, great that there's going to be this night now for Mark Richardson to really get the plaudits that he deserves.
Yeah, and I think it's come at a perfect time for him as well. Mark Richardson is, I think he's only just turned sort of 30, 31, so he's still got a lot of years in front of him as a defenseman. So I think that it's come at the stage now where Richardson's still good enough for us to for all the fans to love that he's getting his testimonial. I think in previous years, like, just as an example, a small example, I think Jason Stone's testimonial came a lot too late, and a lot of the fans who were watching him when he was young had sort of faded away from the game, and it wasn't quite as well supported as maybe you'd like to think it could have been. But I think that Richardson's is going to get massive traction. I think that the fans are going to come out in force for it. I think that putting it off last year for the match to take place is just, it's just typical Mark Richardson to put everything before himself. You know, the match, the Cardiff Devils comes before Mark Richardson, Scott Masker came before Mark Richardson, you know, Andrew Hotham comes before Mark Richardson in terms of, you know, the sort of praise that he gets, the way he plays, the praise he gets. And I think it's really, really important and warranted and completely and utterly deserved after his service that this year there are, you know, the one specific game, but there's events and everything, which is where Mark Richardson comes first. And I say that with such a passion in my voice, because he just is a Devil's legend. And I tweeted earlier on that this is the first testimonial where I'm more excited for the person that the testimonial is for. In years gone by, I've been excited to see Vezio Sacratini back and all the legends return. This game's about Mark Richardson, and Mark Richardson deserves this more than anyone I can think of that's had a testimonial for the Devils. I'm delighted that we've got a date confirmed. I'm very much hoping that I can be there, and if I can't, I'll be buying about 6 tickets and buying all the merchandise that I can. Because, like I said, no one deserves it more, and the setup is a bit different as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing that take place.
Yeah, in you know, two of the probably most popular Devils captains of recent time have already confirmed back with Mac Faulkner and Tyson Marsh, captaining both teams. And there's going to be a draft night the night before, with both captains choosing from the pool of returning players and the current Devils team. So more than just the current team playing a bunch of retired ex-players, it'll be a bit more mixed up and just something else for the event the night before the game as well. So yeah, nice to see something different, because testimonials are great for honouring the people and or whatever reason they are, but the games are never particularly exciting. So I think it's good to see something a little bit different that might spark a little bit more interest than the average testimonial game would.
Before we press on to the preview as well, Paul, we're talking about the testimonial and how young Mark Richardson still is. Obviously, he's getting a testimony at this stage of his career. Is he one of those players? I know we talk about this amongst ourselves all the time. We've probably got far too many of them already. But is he a genuine contender to have his name and number up in the rafters, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. And I think I almost instinctively said no. And I think that's all down to, as you said, your Mark Richardson is never in front of anything else. It's always the club. It's always someone else. It's always the guys on the ice with, making sure that he's mopping up after them. And yeah, it's difficult to find a reason to say no, other than I think we've got too many retired numbers already. If he does another 5 years with us, and especially if the club goes into the era of success that obviously we're all hoping that we're going to go into, if Mark Richardson's a major part of that, then there's a massively strong case to be made. Let's hope we're having that discussion in 4 or 5 years when he's still playing and won the league four or five times.
I was going to say it's probably a discussion for another day, but I'm just sat here thinking about the testimony now and was wondering whether it was just me.
I think it's an interesting point, and depending on how things pan out, I think it's definitely something that could become a discussion point in the future. I was thinking to myself, as you went their way, I was thinking of a fantasy draft in my mind of who I would draft in my fantasy devil squad, but that's definitely another episode. We've spoken far too much about beating Davos already. So
did we beat Davos?
Well, we hadn't mentioned it, so I thought I'd just pop it in again. but what we will talk about is the two games we got coming up this weekend, both Challenge Cup games. And, a bit of a different Challenge Cup group for us this year, with Milton Keynes, Guildford and Coventry making up our group. So, not quite the group of death that we've had in the past, with Sheffield, Nottingham and Belfast usually joining us. along with Coventry. First game at home, Milton Keynes, and it's also the banner raising night. Another sort of really good touch by the Devils to make sure they chose a team where there's some guys who also won the league with us, with Guy Doucette and Denny Kearney in the Milton Keynes lineup. And so that game's been chosen to allow them to be present along with, you know, the Devils as the league Challenge Cup banner both get put in the rafters. So, you know, a big night there, Sean, even before we get any competitive hockey underway.
Yeah, definitely. And it's exciting. It's good to finally get, put the last year behind us as well. And a shame in a way because it was an unbelievable year, but it's good to finally move on and put it up there, and you know it'll always be there, and it'll be something to remember. And I'm glad that we have chosen to do it with Deuce and Kearney in the building, because they were a massive part of us winning those two trophies. So yeah, it's going to be an exciting night.
Yeah, and you're probably for 80% of the fans in the building, it'll be the first time a league championship banner has gone up while they've been in attendance. So I definitely can't wait. But moving on to the game, obviously we've mentioned that sort of Doucette and Kearney are there, but I think Milton Keynes have gone, you know, they've looked at making sure they've got players who are experienced in the Elite League. And I think there's the makings of a decent squad there. On top of them, Carl Hudson's come back to UK hockey. They've picked up Matt Nickerson, who's always entertainment, if nothing else. And Jonathan Boxhill from Belfast, which is a real good quality Brit to be able to sign from a really good quality team as well in terms of the Giants. And with netminder injury to their starter, Adom, or whatever his name is. I thought I had it in my head then. I can't get out of my mouth. Mika Weekman's come in as injury cover. So, a strong flavour of Elite League experience through that squad, Sean. And, potential for a tough game for you?
Yeah, possibly. I think that Milton Keynes is going to look to put a marker out. This is, you know, I don't think they're going to go out and expect to win the league this year, so they're going to want to make a good impression in the Challenge Cup at least. And, I think progressing to at least the semi-final stage would be something of an achievement for them, and I think they'll see it that way. It's going to be a competition that they think they can go out and win. So, I think they're going to go out and give it their all. And there's some guys with, a couple of messages to send. You know, Doucette and Kearney obviously weren't re-signed by the Devils. Is this their, this is their game to sort of go out and prove that maybe they were deserving of coming back? Obviously, it doesn't make a difference now, but maybe that'll be give them a bit of fire in their bellies. Same thing with Carl Hudson, obviously coming off the back of his season in France. And Mika Weekman will be looking to perform. He's always performed well against us for Nottingham. And a lot of the time, I think for Nottingham, he was the standout player, and he single-handedly won games against us. So that'll be interesting. I'm really interested to see whether they keep him on when their starter recovers. I think he's going to want to retain a starting slot there. So I think he's going to be going and giving his A game as well. So yeah, I think it could prove to be an interesting matchup, and they're going to want to upset the evening and the occasion as well. So yeah, it could be a tough one.
Yeah. It's an interesting weekend. Cause obviously on Sunday, then we travel to Guildford. So two new teams in the weekend. I'm massively looking forward to getting to a new rink. It's been a while since a new British ice rink has happened in the Elite League. There's a few spaces left on the Red Army Travel bus as a cheap plug, just to throw it in there.
Also, Paul, just a quick one. They have got a Wimpy next door.
A Wimpy? Oh, look at this. We've got rinks with Papa John's, and we've got rinks with Wimpy next door. It's an exciting time to be an Elite League fan. I'm distracted by Wimpy. looking at the Guildford team, I couldn't tell you the last time I had a Wimpy. This is like news that's rocked my world. Guildford, I've got sort of made a quick note of the players they've signed from around the Elite League. They've picked up Brian Stewart in net, who's also already managed to have a match penalty in pre-season, so whether he's playing or not is another matter. Mike Wills, the backup, so he could be playing. Ben Davis and Liam Stewart, a couple of good British signings, along with Kevin Phillips, the better of the Phillips brothers, and Mikael Bidhammer from Dundee, who was always a bit of a thorn in the side. A Devils player is quite a gritty character. Don't think there's any names there that necessarily stand out as much as those that Milton Keynes have managed to grab, Sean. But looking at the rest of the squad, especially the new signings, I'm not sure if Guildford have underestimated the quality of the Elite League, because there's a lot of guys straight out of uni, and to me, it looks like it's going to be a long, tough season for Guildford.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you. You look at they've tried to get in some Elite League experience in the way that Milton Keynes have. Benny Davis, an experienced British player, and a standout starting netminder in his first couple of seasons, Brian Stewart. And you just look at their overall roster. They kept a couple of imports from their EPL sort of seasons in the last few years. And I'm with you, Paul. I think it's going to be a long, tough season for Guildford. And I don't think it's that they're short of money either, because I think they're quite a wealthy club. So I think it's just the case of getting a feel for the division and the level of play, given not quite putting an EPL side out there, but maybe holding back a bit of that cash to sort of get a feel for it, realise what it's all about, and then maybe going for it next year. I think this is a rebuilding phase for Guildford. It's their first time in the top league since, ever. I think they've always been in the sort of second tier for a long, long time. So.
Not for a long time, in the last 15 years, I think. But I think
even when the BNL was, Guildford were in the BNL, I don't ever remember them being part of the Super League. And the BNL was around at that stage as well. So I don't, even look back to somewhere like 95, and I don't think Guildford were at the top level then. So
I think you saying about the money is interesting. There was quite a lot of uproar when the season ticket prices were announced for Milton Keynes. They shot up quite markedly, and their fans were quite unhappy with it. But I think you can see the outcome of that in some of the players that they've signed. Speaking to Guildford, people associated with Guildford, they kept their ticket prices exactly the same. And their fans complained about that, conversely, that they expected to see the prices go up because they expected the team budget to go up, and they wanted to see that higher quality on the ice. So I think it's a bit of a gamble on Guildford's part that it's a rebuilding season, but can you hold fans if you're that uncompetitive night after night, which, not saying they definitely will be, but if you're going to gamble on keeping your fans for a season in the hope that the year after you can get your money, you really then go bang and go for it. It's two completely contrasting ways of coming up to the Elite League, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, but it's interesting as well in the fact that Guildford have that level of resource that if it does start to go wrong in the early days in the Challenge Cup, then they can look to bring in, higher quality players. And I think that they have some links with Petr Cech as well, who's an avid fan. So maybe he has some friends back home who would be interested in coming over to play for Guildford. And with it being, not all that far from London, really, it's probably quite an attractive destination for an import to sort of come. So if the money's there and one of the guys who doesn't quite get his AHL contract wants to come and try the UK, maybe that's one avenue they can look at to, bolster their team. And it's really, really difficult to see how Guildford are going to do. And I think they're going to be a side which I think they have underestimated it, and I don't think they realise quite how much. But they'll try and put things right if the crowds start to drop. I think that's pretty clear, because there's nowhere else for them to go. The NIHR one is just not good enough for them to play in it, and this is the only place they can be at the moment.
This is it now. Is that almost the safety cushion of going back to the EPL is gone, as you said. So yes, it's definitely interesting though, but great to have some new teams to talk about and some new places to visit. We'll see how the opening weekend goes. And I think it's quite nice that Devils get to start the season with a couple of Challenge Cup games that may be a little bit less high pressure before the real business starts in the league the week after. But I think that's everything. Sean, anything else you wanted to cover?
No, I think that's about it. I think we've probably had a really, really long show by now.
It's gone quite long. It's almost as if we won a game in the CHL and we wanted to talk about it.
Have we won a game in the CHL?
I think it was Davos we beat. I don't know if we've mentioned it. So for anyone that didn't realise, we beat Davos. That's our show. We hope you didn't miss Aaron too much. As we said, please don't tell him if you did.
I didn't.
No, it's been delightful. It's been lovely talking to you, Sean.
You too.
And if you've got any thoughts on the show, please send it to us. If you've got any your Ramite suggestions as the weekend goes through, send us what you love, what you hate about the weekend, and anything that you want us to discuss. We haven't had a burning question for a while, so if you've got one that's just sat there just begging to be discussed and answered, send it to us. at Red Army Roundup on Twitter. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Sean. And for now, that is your Red Army Roundup. Devon side, the Devon side. Every single one of us.